If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Welcome to Women Patriots. I'm Brenda Ward, your host, along with Barbara Buffing, my co-host tonight. And tonight, I'm going to start. There are so many places we could go tonight, but I was just reading some things that were very disturbing to me today. And one of them is the UN approval of the arms treaty, which we'll go into later. But there is this doctor on trial from a Planned Parenthood, or I don't know if he was Planned Parenthood, but he was an abortion doctor, Gosnell. And he would, these babies would be born alive, viable babies, and he would slit their spinal cord to kill them and think nothing of it. And he killed several patients, and his trial is ongoing currently right now. They had to postpone it because his attorney was sick. Well, I'd be sick, too. This was done in Pennsylvania, and he was performing abortions up to 24 weeks. But in this one case, there's a baby boy that it was a 17-year-old girl, and that baby was, they found 32 weeks along. In other words, it was a viable infant, and he delivered it. And then he cut the spinal cord, and the baby twitched and flopped around because he obviously didn't kill it yet. And his staff was so disgusted that they took pictures of this baby. And he was joking about it. He said, "This baby is big enough to walk around with me or walk to the bus stop." This is sick, people. This is just sick. And then the 17-year-old, and I'm not going to say poor mother because... obviously, what she did was wrong, but she got infected and ended up with blood clots in her lungs, which could have killed her, and he told her to take her pain medicine. She was smart enough to go to another doctor. Just disgusting. But that doesn't end there. Now, we got this story coming out of the UK where scientists want to plunder the ovaries of aborted babies in vitro fertilization treatments. Really? Can we get any sicker? This is was given in a conference in Madrid, a scientific conference in Madrid. They have the technology to do this because there's a shortage of donated eggs for women who cannot produce their own. Oh my gosh. This process is illegal in Britain, but not everywhere. And What are you going to tell the children born from this? Oh, well, your mother was an aborted baby because nobody wanted her. You know, what? This is just so unethical and playing God to the hilt. And what it leads to, I have to bring this up, because in Brazil, there is a doctor that killed 300 people in euthanasia to free up hospital beds in the ICU, because what this leads to is a total disregard for life at any stage. It says 32% of all euthanasia deaths were done without explicit request, and 47% were not reported as euthanasia. And now these are overseas because obviously it's not legal in the United States. But this is not the first case. This is a Dr. De Sousa who's accused. Dr. Harold Shipman, they think, killed 250 people in England and was convicted of 15 murders. Dr. Michael Swango was an American doctor who killed 60 patients. And there was a Finnish nurse who was convicted of killing 5. Why do they think this is okay? Because we live in a culture of death that says it's okay to kill the most innocent among us. And then we have the most horrific, ridiculous, and if people cannot see Planned Parenthood for what it is after this story, where the Planned Parenthood representative in Florida said that even if the baby's born alive, it's the mother and the doctor's right to decide the baby's fate, even if this baby is breathing. Barbara, I'm just totally disgusted.
Yeah,
totally.
I know. And as I was telling you earlier, I couldn't even read the stories. They were so disgusting. I cringed at even the headline. I just was like, no way.
Well, yeah, and then people think, you know, abortion's fine. Well, no, it's not. And for the simple reason that it desensitizes people to death. When we can't protect the smallest among us, you know, the babies that used to be, everybody wanted that child, and that was the future, that was your future, that was your family's future. When they become objects to be disposed of at will, I think it leads not only to what we're seeing with this euthanasia and this, we're going to use the fetuses now to harvest eggs. What? And it's nonsense. I mean, it's just totally unethical, totally unacceptable.
Inhuman.
Yeah,
it's just there's no word for it. It's horrible.
Yeah. We're the only species that aborts our children in the womb.
We're supposed
to be the most intelligent. But they're worried about you know, what if these babies get personhood? Well, then that destroys Roe versus Wade, because back in the 70s, they didn't have the technology we have, you know, and so they determined it was a part of the mother. Well, we know that's not true. And so they got to fight to kill these born alive babies.
Mm.
It's just, I just cannot. I'm just really reading those headlines today, and people wonder what the problem is. Well, look, it leads to euthanasia, because pretty soon, you know, the elderly aren't viable. Because they have no quality. They're just taking up room and they're just costing us money, so let's kill them. You know, when does the viability end? Oh, that disabled person with cerebral palsy isn't viable, so let's just kill them and save us money and save suffering. You know, this is where this all goes, and this is why we stand so strongly against it in the first place. I shouldn't say that's the only reason. You know, babies are babies, and I've always been pro-life. But the logical conclusion of basing things on viability is that anybody can be killed at any time for any reason.
Yeah. And in the Constitution, you know, life, liberty, and freedom.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, that
life.
That's not even giving a baby a chance. And then like I said, there's just no words to describe it. It absolutely 100% disgusts me.
Yeah, and I can't understand how a doctor could, you know, slit the throat of a baby born alive. I mean, really? Really?
Yeah.
That is so far outside of the oath that he took as a physician.
Right.
It's just, and yet our current president actually was for that same infanticide on children born out of botched abortions. Yeah. Good man. I'm so disgusted.
Yeah.
But we do want to let our listeners know that tonight we do have a special guest coming on, Colin, and I'm not real sure how to say his last name. I want to say Flaherty, and he covers black mob violence in America. There's a lot of instances going on that we have no clue because nobody's reporting on them. So he's going to join us here shortly to talk a little bit more about that epidemic that's going on. And I would say it probably is an epidemic, and maybe help us, you know, see what can we do to make it different. You know, what can we, how can we change that? So you want to stay tuned for that and make sure you're listening when he joins us here very, very shortly. But, yeah, it's just like, I'm just, well, and then, oh, we got the voter fraud going on.
Yeah.
You know, this story is coming out of New York, of course, the great state of New York, the nanny state of New York.
Yeah, there was
State Senator Malcolm Smith and City Councilman Halloran are arrested in a bribery plot to rig the mayor race. They schemed to run as a GOPer, and they took money. Yeah, and they're going to go to trial because they were caught in a sting of trying to take money for the mayor. Yeah, but you know, hey, it's the Republicans that cheat. There's no voter fraud, really. Really,
I love
people.
When they're so stupid that they get caught.
Oh, I know. Same thing happened in Chicago with whatever his name was trying to sell Obama's seat. What is wrong with these people? What happened to honor and truth and, you know, things I was taught as a child? You know, I was taught to respect and to truth and not to deliberately go out and lie and try to deceive people. But this is what the whole Democratic Party has become.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say the whole party. I think in some of the conservative states, some of the Democrats probably are, or at least think they're being truthful, but this Chicago political machine and this New York political machine and these people are just so dishonest. Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, it's just, and these are supposed to be reverends.
I know.
You know, God says not to lie.
And what about, speaking of reverends, Obama's reverend at the church on Sunday?
Oh, I briefly read that, but fill us in, because I read it and then it slipped my mind, but it wasn't good.
It was kind of just like on the top of my thing here. He was saying basically how it was the Republicans' fault.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we want to put how Republicans want.
We want to put them back in slavery.
Put them in the back of the bus. And
yeah.
You know what? It's these people that just cannot be so wrong, but yet they're not open minded enough to listen.
No.
And they just open their big mouths and they don't stop. You can't get a word in edgewise.
And then you get somebody like Ben Carson comes along and speaks truth and common sense, and then they attack him. One of the schools doesn't want him to come speak at their graduation because of his views on life and gay marriage and stuff like that. You know, this is America. We are founded on Judeo-Christian foundations.
Yeah.
I mean, that's our foundation. And yet the nerve of some of these colleges and the things that are going on in some of these more liberal states. It's pretty clear that the switch is on to conservativenationradio.org. And if you have any doubts, just check out our new Saturday show with Internet radio veteran Robert Garding. The New Wise Conservatism Show now comes to you on conservativenationradio.org every Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central. After years hosting the New Wise Conservatism Show, Robert has a big following, so listen Saturday and you'll find out why. Thousands love his brand of New Wise Conservatism, and you will too. The New Wise Conservative Show with Robert Garding, Saturdays at 4 Eastern, 3 Central, on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to even listen in Saturday. We've had busy. Did you have a good Easter, by the way?
I did. I went to my sister-in-law's house, and her friend was there. Well, my sister-in-law's friend, and they were there with their two kids, 19 and 17. Mm-hmm. And then the friend's mother came because she was here from New York, and she was just such a sweet little Italian lady. She just turned 89, and she was just as sweet as can be. She kept me amused. I had a great time.
Well, good. We had a pretty good one here, too. It was kind of interesting because, I hide the plastic eggs outside for the kids, and our crowd was a little less this year because we had, for some reason, Easter fell before spring break. I don't know. Weird. Never, I don't know what's going on. But we look out the window, and there's a squirrel carrying one of the plastic eggs in its mouth.
Oh, geez.
He took the egg. He took it to his nest, and they could hear him crunching on it, and he was eating the candy.
Oh, that's too funny.
And then we found another one, and they had chewed through the egg and took the candy out. It was like, my son's running out the door, what? And then he's like, the squirrel's got the egg. Sure enough, I mean, he's got this big old green egg in his mouth. I don't think anybody got a good picture because I don't think anybody would believe it, but it was just hilarious. And I said, well, we better get this Easter egg hunt started before the squirrels start converging on the yard to steal
really?
The eggs. But,
oh, that's too funny.
Isn't that funny? It's like, okay, he liked those Snickers. Got them nuts in those Snickers, you know.
I know, you say that.
But yeah, so we had a pretty good Easter too. So that was a good thing this weekend. And of course, the remembrance of Christ dying for the sins, which at this point in time are just, you wonder if it's enough, you know. Like, really, people.
And at the same time, Chavez was honored. It was Chavez Day. What's his first name?
I saw that. It wasn't Hugo. It was the... I don't remember. But yeah, Google had him as their face for the day. It was like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Unbelievable. How disrespectful can people be? I just don't understand. And that's what it all boils down to.
Yeah.
Let's see what kind of controversy we can cause.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Catholic thing.
Right. Well, and indoctrination, too, has occurred, among some of the younger generation. There's a falsehood pervasive because in Hollywood, God is to be mocked. Although the Bible does very well on the miniseries that they're running on cable.
Yeah, I've
because they're not really right in Hollywood, and they're not really right in Washington and New York and Chicago. These people, this is where they poll people at. And just because those people think that way doesn't mean the majority of America does. But we do have our work cut out for us to try to turn things around. So we're going to take a quick break. We do have a special guest coming on tonight. So if you have questions, we encourage you to call 718-305-7176. You are listening to Women Patriots on conservativenationradio.org. I am also going to slide up just a little early tonight because I'm just feeling a little blah, and Barbara's going to Bing's going to come on and help Barbara on with the rest of the show. But for right now, we're just going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Happy holidays, everybody. This is Brad Paisley for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. When you're traveling during the holidays and see somebody who's had too much to drink about to get behind the wheel, well, get those keys and save a life. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing, The Beauty and the Brain, on conservativenationradio.org.
Okay, and you're back with Women Patriots on conservativenationradio.org. The number to call, 718-305-7176, if you'd like to join the discussion. We are expecting our guest here shortly, within, say, 10, 15 minutes. We're going to have Colin Flaherty. He's a journalist and author of the book White Girls Lead a Lot, and he reports on black mob violence across the country for those of us, because in the mainstream media ignores this. It's the return of, he calls it the return of rape of violence to America, and how the media ignore it. And so I think we're going to have some really good discussion coming out with this, because we need to call them out on this. We need to call them out on this. And actually, I think Colin is here. So shall we bring him on, Barbara?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Hey, hi, Colin.
Greetings.
I hope I didn't butcher your last name there.
No, you did fine.
Okay. It's just a little bit different, so it's like, I'm not sure that's quite right. So, welcome to Women Patriots.
I am honored to be here.
Well, we're just really glad to have you. And we kind of like for our guests just to kind of tell our listeners a little bit about themselves. So, if you wouldn't mind, just tell us about Colin.
Well, I was a reporter for a long time. And I wrote some big stories, won a lot of journalism awards. The biggest story I ever wrote was I wrote a story all by my lonesome that got a black man out of prison. He was accused of trying to kill his white girlfriend. I showed the crime never happened, and the girl had tried to accuse somebody else of the same thing 1 year before. So that was a big deal. That was a national story.
Wow.
So I won a lot. So, but I thought I was out of the reporting racket. I have a business and a very successful marketing communications company that I'm very happy at. But my brother and I do a talk radio show once in a while. So a couple of years ago, we're doing our, you know, we're the guest hosts, and we're doing our thing, and start seeing all these stories coming in about these mobs up in Philadelphia. So I start asking around, going, "Hey, what is that? It looks like a race riot to me." The other reporter said, no, that race has nothing to do with it. Then I started looking at the videos, and the videos would show 1,000 black people running down the street to Philadelphia, pulling people out of cars, beating people up, setting things on fire, running into restaurants, bad stuff. And it happened dozens of times. Every time it happened, they would have a video, and I would take it to the other reporters. I would say, "That looks like a race riot." And they kept saying it wasn't. Then I started kind of figuring out this was happening all over the country. So there's really two things going on here, right? One is the race riots, black mob violence all over the country, cities big and small, places where you might expect it, places where you might not. And that's crazy. But even crazier than that is the ability of people to ignore it, explain it away, condone it, and even lie about it. And I'm talking about police chiefs and people in the press. So that's my story.
That's your story. And, you know, I've been following your stories for a while, but what really grabbed my attention is I'm in Indiana. So you had just recently reported on the mobs that were happening down in Indianapolis.
For people outside of Indianapolis, let me ask you this. Does anybody know that Indianapolis is a hotbed of racial violence?
No,
I had really not thought so. Does anybody know that? No. How about Milwaukee? How about Minnesota?
No.
How about Peoria? How about Springfield, Missouri? How about Greensboro, North Carolina? How about Charlotte? Mention all these places. They're just like Indianapolis. Indianapolis had a ton of problem every year with the Indiana Black Expo in downtown Indianapolis. 10 people shot, 1,000 people running through the streets. When the expo's not on earlier this year, there was all sorts of problems. Black mob violence at the downtown mall. Cops kind of flooded the area with helicopters and officers. Then they moved out to the suburban mall, the Castleton Mall. They had a nasty episode out there a few weeks ago. If it's happening in Indianapolis, I'm telling you, that's happening everywhere.
You know, and the amazing thing is, and we're going to have Karen Sigmund on a little later. She started Rage Against the Media for things that are not reported. And then when we go ahead and we'll put them, we'll go to like NBC or CNN and start talking about it, their readers think we're crazy. That it's not
It's tough to talk about race. People have a tough time with it because they don't know how. And so here's how I do it. 1, no generalizations. 2, no stereotypes. 3, no apologies either. And so when we talk about race, racial violence, racial mob violence, I like to be very specific. I just say, hey, listen, that happened in Indiana a dozen times in the last year or so. Dozen examples of racial mob violence in Indianapolis. What does that mean? I mean, that means something, but everybody's too afraid to think about it.
Yeah,
well,
it's such a controversial deal. I mean, that woman that was shot and the 13-month-old baby that was shot, that was black shooting white, race, and they nobody ever said anything about a race crime. But if it was the other way around, that would be the first thing out of their mouth.
The psychiatrists tell us that we're only as sick as our secrets.
Right.
There's nothing more secretive in America than race.
Yeah.
Nobody can talk about it. So I'm just telling you, I spend a lot of time on this, talking to people all over the world about this. And there's a lot of people out there that are crazy in the head about the racial thing, mostly because none of us can talk about it. So you get crazy things happening, and people look at each other and go, did that just happen? And a minute later they go, no, it didn't happen.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Colin. Here in Fort Wayne, they just had a meeting of a lot of the black leaders in the community, and I was pleasantly surprised that they realized that it's a problem with too much time on the hands of their children, you know, and they're not blaming it on the white people,
One of the things I don't do in my book, I don't do causes, and I don't do explanations, and I don't do solutions. Because I tell you, there's a million of them. Everybody's got, like, you know, most, and 99% of them are more social programs.
Oh, yeah.
And
Guess
what? That's what that means. More time, you know, if they have too much time on their hands, that means more social programs. And so that's what I hear all the time.
Yeah, and absolutely. That is what part of the problem is that, you know, they're getting free money. They don't have jobs. And part of that comes to unemployment, which is a problem in this country. They don't have jobs. They have the highest
unemployment. See, here's the thing. You're falling into the trap now. Falling into the trap. It's like we're moving away from the violence and we're getting into the causes and the solutions because that's so much safer for us. We can be, you know, we're on safe ground. Oh, it's unemployment. Oh, it's lack of parenting. Oh, it's those social programs. I can do this for, I could do the excuses for gone tomorrow. Guess what? Everybody's been doing excuses for 50 years. Now, so let me ask you this question. Do you think race relations in America are better today than they were 50 years ago?
No.
Did you have this happening in Indianapolis 50 years ago?
No. No.
So there's something going on. So my book is really a challenge to everybody. It's saying, listen, there's something going on out there. And my guess is it's something systematic. My guess is that it's something systematic, and nobody's talking about it. But it's not a shortage of social programs. I guarantee
no.
that much.
Well, and you get a little bit of hint of it, I think, when you what was said at the Easter service that Obama attended this past Sunday, and what was said by Reverend Wright, his former pastor.
You know, let me ask you this. Is that not an example of people who are insane talking
yeah.
about race in an insane fashion?
Yes.
That's
yes.
insane what that guy said.
Well, even, you know, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson.
It's insane. There's two parts of insanity. One, it's insane that the stuff they say. Two, it's even crazier that people put them on the air and listen to them.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like all of us are sitting here with our cow, you know, whenever this comes up, we all just sit here and cower and shiver and go, I can't call Al Sharpton crazy because somebody's going to come, you know, my life's going to end. Well,
yeah.
Guess what? I do it all the time. I'm still alive. And you know what? It's time for us. But here's the thing. Because we're so not used to talking about race, it's so easy to go out of bounds. And if we just don't generalize, don't stereotype, stay with the facts, don't apologize, we'll be fine.
And that's kind of hard to do.
There's
because,
a lot of material
you know,
out there.
You find yourself... You know, you read about another shooting, and you're just like, oh, yeah, they're black, you know, without even seeing the picture.
It doesn't even get reported anymore.
I know, but, I mean, that's how I think here in my own town of Fort Wayne. I'm in Fort Wayne, which is a little smaller town. But, you know, it's really hard not to take your mind there.
Here's the thing. So I don't know that you or I or anybody suggests that for every crime – we should, or every report, crime report in the newspaper, we should attach the race to it.
Right.
But neither should we be at the other end of the spectrum where the press absolutely ignores racial violence of all kinds, racial mob violence, which is my specialty. They ignore it. But it's funny how they do it. First they look you in the eye and they say, it's not happening. Then with the same breath they say, well, here's why it's happening. Not happening, but here's why. And it's like, okay, you can't have it both ways.
And it's your fault.
it always gets back to, yeah, it's like, they always flip it, right? It's like, the predators become the victims, and the victims become the predators. And I'm one of the people that, you know, I'm sitting here and noticing it, and so it's like, it's my fault.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? Guess what? I don't care about that. I don't have any problem looking at anybody in the eye and saying, we have a big problem in this country, a racial problem, and I'm not going to let you flip it around and make me the problem, because guess what? It's not me.
Well, you can bet if these were mobs of white males running around, it would be national headlines.
You know, it's funny. Whenever I do a show, especially a big national show, somebody will call in and go, that happens all the time. I go, okay, give me one example. They go, I actually had a guy last week say, it happens at sororities all the time. Would you mind telling me what you're talking about? I said, give me an example. He goes, well, I can't, but I just know it happens.
Oh, jeez.
So, people say that. It's like, it happens all the time. Okay, well, tell me. When?
I know, because I've read, you know, some of the stories where they're running in and stealing stuff out of the stores, and the police don't even try to stop them.
National Association of Retailers put out a study last year that said, 25% to 50% of every retail store in America has experienced that. You know what kind of number that is?
That's astronomical.
It's unbelievable.
And then I'm
it's an unbelievable number.
Yeah.
It's all on video. You know these little convenience stores now, they have video cameras that you didn't even have in TV studios 10 years ago. So it's all on video. It's all on video on the stores. All on video on the buses. We've got a major problem. It's being underreported.
Yes.
But it's not being underfilmed.
Yeah, instead they want to report on, you know, the president playing golf with Tiger Woods or, you know, some inane story when we obviously have a problem. You know, and it shouldn't matter what color their skin is. If there's a group of any kind of citizens running into stores and stealing, that's a story.
You know, I get a lot of mail from all over the country, and the one who I found talked to this problem about his perspective on it that appealed to me the most. I get mail from prison psychologists, and this guy was telling me the mechanism of the whole thing, how people in school they learn very early on that they're victims, that they're not responsible. So all of a sudden, that builds up resentment and it leads to anger and the violence. And it's funny. So, and he was describing the mechanism perfectly because he sees it every day at his work. And I was listening to a radio station today. I was actually listening to NPR today. It tells you what a bad person I am. And these two liberals were having this little kumbaya discussion, and the discussion turned to what their children learn about race in the first grade. And it was perfect because we're not just teaching, you know, young black children about resentment and victimization and how they're not responsible. We're teaching all the upper class white kids too, and all these kids are learning about, you know, how black people are victimized, how their white people hate them, how they never had a chance. And I'm just telling you, there's something going on all over the country where we give people a message about not being responsible for your behavior, and somehow I'm responsible for your behavior. And then we turn around and get surprised when people act out the way we kind of teach them to act.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
So I just broke my own rule, by the way, about explaining. So if you want to work that out.
You won't.
That's okay.
But that's the best one. It's like right down there on the ground level at this prison psychologist. I'll tell you something. You put these prison psychologists in a room talking about this, you get a whole lot of truth-telling all in one place.
Mm-hmm. And I think it all comes down to that, Colin, is basically, you know, taking responsibility for your life and your actions, something people are very lax to do right now in America.
Now, we talk about this black mob violence and lawlessness all over the country, and I see these horrific videos, and I hear these stories from cops, and I hear these stories from social workers. I'm telling you, there's a lot of shell-shocked people out there that are on the front lines of this problem. Did you see where a few weeks ago where a Chicago cop committed suicide?
No, I didn't see that one.
A Chicago cop committed suicide. I had a couple emails right away going, that is PTSD, as real as if he had just returned from Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about that. I've been thinking that's the case for a while as well.
Well, and especially this refusal to acknowledge. You know, they want to go after, this comes down to the gun situation too. They want to try to say, take the guns from responsible citizens and not address the problems of the gangs, which unfortunately, and I can't apologize. You said that are, you know, a high percentage blacks and Hispanics who are out there shooting innocent children on the streets of Chicago, and yet they want to take that law-abiding citizen's gun away.
You know what? If somebody could explain that to me, I'd be very grateful for that.
So would we. But what you're doing is great because you're right. We don't hear about this enough, and it needs to be told. It's a story that should be on the national news, and just because it is a problem, you know, it's a problem for multiple reasons. And,
everybody is so much into the guilt aspect of it. You know, a lot of the reporters. You know, I was a reporter for a long time, trained reporters, and party with reporters, and they're all convinced that whatever the problem is, somehow we are responsible for it, and not the people who are committing the crimes. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the that's also reflected in the coverage.
Yes, and that's so wrong. I mean, I tell my kids this, you know, I don't care how bad your childhood was, at some point you have to make the decision to take control of your life and be responsible for what you do. And that's just common sense, and I think we've lost that.
Here's my question to you guys. So we're just sitting on the corner. We're watching all this stuff happen, and all this racial violence. And there was a lot of it out there, enormous amount of it out there, racial mob violence. So who's crazier, the people doing the violence or the person standing next to you who looks at the same thing you look at and says, I can't see a thing? You know what? Those are the crazy people, the really crazy.
That's what a lot of people are saying, you know, don't be afraid of Obama, be afraid of the people that support him.
It's a lot too. Obama's just one guy. I don't care about him. I'm with them 100%.
Yeah.
What you just said.
Yeah, go ahead, Barbara.
Back during the election, the kids in school, they were having mock elections, and a 10-year-old little boy, he had voted for Romney in the election. And one of the other students, they weren't supposed to talk about it afterwards, and they did, and this 10-year-old boy was called a racist because he didn't vote for Romney.
Or Obama, yeah.
Yeah, he did vote for Romney. And
you know, here.
That's, again, where you were saying it's in the school starting at an early age. Yes, it is.
Here's one thing I've noticed. This is maybe a positive development. So this is going on for 50 years, right, all the excuses. And so when you have some mob violence or something really bad happens in Chicago or Peoria or whatever, Indianapolis, all the usual suspects stand up there and they go, oh, it's because of the jobs. Oh, it's because of the motherhood. Oh, it's because of this. Oh, it's because of that. Oh, it's because of 400 years. I swear to you, I believe those people are getting sick of hearing themselves say that stuff because it's so silly and it's so transparently uninsightful. So maybe I'm just imagining this, but I just think people are hungering for some truth on this topic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Colin, I had kids going to school, back in the 90s. And they could see they were treated differently. Our kids were treated differently than the kids, the black kids in the school, held to a different standard in the school. So
you can go on the website of any city, big city in the country, including Indianapolis, including Minneapolis, and you go to the police department, you go to the personnel section, you're going to see these words. It shocked you to see these words printed in the year 2013. You're going to see two words, the words protected minority.
Oh.
And they're going to describe in detail today, right now, they're going to describe in detail what they will do with you if you are a member of a protected minority and how they will help you pass the test and, you know, join their department. And so if you think, you know, you think people are being treated differently, you're not imagining that.
And like I said, that was going on 20 years ago. So, you know, and I think it's always gotten a little more. And we just had Uncle Bing join us. Bing, you got a little wind coming through the headphones. But did you have a question for Colin?
I was basically wanting to, you know, just if he could point out the actual intensity of the people that are out there doing this. I mean, you got, I'm looking at 33,000 gangs in the United States, and there's over 1.4 million Americans that are wearing colors of some sort. Okay, now I'm not saying all of them are different or bad or whatever, but I mean, these people are contributing a lot to crime, damn near 50% from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So, I mean, we do have to recognize and understand what these people are, and we have to try to figure out, you know, what to do about them. But I think we need to recognize who they are.
You know, I don't really. That's one group I don't really, you know, mess with too much. The gangs, because that would be kind of easy pickings. What I'm finding out there is not the people wearing the colors. It's just people who are not wearing colors that are getting, like, you know, they play a game called the knockout game. People die because of that game. People, you know, 6 people, 10 people, 20 people, 30 people. They find somebody and they knock them out, and sometimes the person dies. Or it'll be like in Chicago yesterday, over the weekend, 500, 1,000 people on the streets of Chicago beating people up. You know, nobody's going around saying Crips and Bloods there. So there's something strange happening, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, and how does it get fixed? You know, how do, and I think you're right. You got to make people aware of the problem before we can even fix the problem.
Yeah, because, you know, it's funny because you talk to people, you know, sometimes people say, what about your solutions, Colin? It's like, a lot of people I talk to don't think there's a problem. So it doesn't make sense to talk about solutions to people who do not believe this is a problem.
Yeah, first we've got to acknowledge it, just kind of like the 12th step. You got to acknowledge there's a problem before you can go about fixing it. And I think we've been silent for too long, being feared that we'll be called racist. And, you know, or other names, or and it's not truly about race in that aspect. You know, it's
you know, it's funny. We could talk about the race of everything, right? I mean, you pick up your newspaper today, you read about the Black Caucus, black churches, black police officers, black firemen, black schools, black professors, the black universities. I mean, and a lot of the stories are written by members of the Association of Black Journalists. So we are a very race-conscious country.
Which you can't have true equality when you're like that.
You know what? That is so transparently true. I don't know, you know, how much work does it take to ignore that truth, the truth of what you just said. It's an enormous amount of work. And I think a lot of people are actually getting tired of it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I know I am. I mean, I so had it. They're human beings. And it doesn't matter what color they are.
Well, yeah, and that's truly how you get to equality, is when you are teaching your children, when you don't teach the children, and you don't see it colors. You know, there shouldn't be any talk about race or colors in first grade. I mean, those kids don't know any different. They can all be friends.
The resentment is palpable. And, you know, behind every Black History Month, behind every celebration of Black heritage and Black oppression, the backstory is always white people are bad people that are doing bad things to us. And that has to figure in to any here, I'm breaking my own rule again. That has to figure into any explanation of why the anger, I mean, why the violence, and why, you know, and that has to figure into that.
Yeah.
When you got the Black Panther sitting there at our voting booths, our most sacred right that we have, and they're sitting there intimidating. I don't think they're intimidating black people, they're intimidating white people. And, you know, I mean, that is a severe problem right there. But it doesn't seem like our law enforcement wants to sit there and discuss this. It doesn't seem like our politicians want to sit there and acknowledge it.
One thing I've learned in the 2 years I've been writing about this, the book and the articles, is that I'm very disappointed in the upper levels of our police departments.
Mm-hmm.
They are absolutely falling down on the job on this. The guys on the streets are heroes. The police chiefs are not.
And do you suppose that's from political
resources or just a political thing?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I'm sorry, Barbara.
Go ahead, Bing. Go ahead.
Do you think this is a lack of resources on the police, or is this just a political issue that nobody wants? It comes from the top down, in other words. You're not talking about this. You're not going to promote this. You're not going to write about this. I don't know how much flack you get from that, you know, writing over there, but I know that there's probably reporters that said, you know, liberal reporters that say, you know, their editors say, you can't talk about this.
No, 100%. And everybody, you know, the mindset is so similar among those folks. A lot of times they don't have to talk about it. My favorite example of this is the police chief and the superintendent of police in Chicago. He's been in there for 2 years. The very first week on the job, he goes to a black church in Chicago. This is all on video. And he unveils to them who's causing all the violence in Chicago. May I tell you what he said?
Please do.
Sarah Palin.
Oh my gosh.
A year later, he's at a hip-hop radio station. He does the same thing. He goes into this long explanation, except now he has another culprit. And I wouldn't even have the nerve to tell you guys these two stories unless it was not on videotape and you could see, anybody could see it anytime they wanted. So a year later, he figured out another culprit. The Pilgrims.
Oh, my.
That's the guy running the police department in Chicago.
Oh, my. Well,
he's not that much different than the guy running the police department in Indianapolis or Fort Wayne or Philly or Boston or Peoria or Springfield. The cops don't want anything to do with the whole racial, you know, thing. I mean, they just don't want anything to do with it.
Wow. That's just amazing. Well, Colin, tell everybody the name of your book. And I think, can you get that like on Amazon.com?
Yeah, easy to get. It's easy to get at Amazon. White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of Racial Violence, and How the Media Ignore It. And right now I'm in the midst of doing a new edition for it. The WND is going to publish this summer, so it's going to be in all the bookstores. So that'll be very exciting as well.
Oh, cool.
The title of the book kind of, it leaves out some S's and so on. I mean, you wrote that for a reason, didn't you?
Do we have time to tell you how I got the title of the book?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
So in Milwaukee on the 4th of July, two summers ago, 50 to 100 black people go into a convenience store on video and loot it. So they all run out, you know, hands full of stolen groceries. And a couple blocks away, this is the night before the 4th of July, and they see a bunch of people having a picnic, like 10, 15 people having a picnic. So they start beating them up. They beat them up pretty good. At one point, a black woman was standing on top of a white girl, pointing at her. She was also motioning to her friends to look at this. And that's what she announced for everybody in the park to hear. White Girl Bleed a Lot, and that was very funny.
Wow.
I guess it's funny if you're not the white girl, you know.
That was funny. That was like, here's another thing on these videos. You ever see TV shows where the criminals act all kind of crazy and they're always laughing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And don't you, when you see that, don't you go, that's kind of nuts. People don't really do that. But when you talk to people who are the victims of this mob violence, it is almost 100% the maniacal laughter, the laughing, the joking, you know, it's crazy. I keep hearing that.
Wow. That's just amazing. And I did post your link of where they have your articles that you've written for WND. Check them out, people, if you have not seen any of his articles. You want to be sure and check them out because they're very, very, it's very thought provoking and it's obviously a very underreported issue. So make sure you kind of take a look at this, and we need to start talking about this a little more. And we may have a caller here with a question, Colin. So if you don't mind, if you've got time to give us just more, Barbara's checking it out for us right now. But I'm just going to play a quick break. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of your hard-earned money going to support liberal and progressive enterprises? I know I am. That's why I shop at thethirdlantern.com. This conservative marketplace ensures that your money is well spent and supports conservative entrepreneurs dedicated to making their products here in America. Look, I'm a business owner. I know how hard it can be to get your product out there. Get on his vendors list, and it will help your sales. I have had his barbecue sauce. It is amazing. Check out their website, thethirdlantern.com. That's the3rdlantern.com. Send your liberal friends there and tell them Higgin Resch sent you. thethirdlantern.com. Put your money where your ideology is.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting, as in Smokey Bear. We were about to head home after a bonfire, and Smokey said the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
No kidding.
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
Kidding. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Okay, and you're back. You're listening to Women Patriots on conservativenationradio.org, and we have Colin Flaherty, who is a journalist and author, talks about mob violence, black mob violence in America. And Barbara, does Abe have a question?
He said he has several questions.
Okay. Well, guys, I'm going to sign off here because I'm not feeling real well tonight. But, Colin, I certainly want to thank you for joining us. And for those listening, Uncle Bing's going to be helping Barbara out for the rest of the show. So thank you also for joining us. And let's bring on Abe.
Feel better, Brenda.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Brenda.
Hello?
Hi, Abe.
Hi, Abe.
You're live on the air.
Hi.
You got a question, Colin?
I had a few concerning questions, actually. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Loud and clear.
All right. Recently, some neighbors moved in next door, and they've been – well, okay, let's just get this off the plate here. They're black, okay? And, I mean, I want to say uncomfortable with it, but – honestly, deep down, hand to my heart, I'm not sure. And I need some help getting through exactly how I need to feel about this. Could you guys help me out?
Well, I mean, what are they doing? I mean, you know, are they doing anything to you? Or, I mean, threatening you?
Well,
or are they just black? I mean, you know, there's no problem, I think, with people.
They're
well,
white?
It's a little bit of... Because... I remember I was out on my driveway one morning, and one of them pulls in with their, who knows, their Escalade blasting their bass just out of nowhere, and they yell something at me, and I turn around, and it's just this group of black young men in the car, and I could tell they were probably doing some sort of marijuana product, I'm not sure, but they yelled at me and they said, "Hey, you white boy, what you doing near our house?" Something of that sort. And I felt threatened because how dare they yell at me when I had nothing to do with them. Do you understand?
Well, I mean, each thing is a little bit different there, Abe. I mean, you know, I don't know as far as what your situation is concerned. I don't know if you live in the inner city, the urban, you know, outside, rural, whatever.
I live in the suburban area.
All right, so they pull up in the black Escalade, and they pull into their own driveway, and I guess they called you or said something about, you know, called you a racial slur. Is that what you would consider? Okay, did they...
How dare they talk about my race? It infuriated me. What does my race have anything to do with them?
Well, if you were really listening, it's because what is being taught in today's society.
I'm offended by almost everything they say because it just talks about me being white. And how
here's
they don't
thing.
Like
can I, you guys mind if I jump in here for a second?
Please do.
Sure.
Okay, so none of us have any power to control what our next door neighbors do. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So one of the things I wrote about in my book, and I wrote articles about this, is what people do to protect themselves. There's a lot of people that make the decision. They were going to protect themselves wherever they go. Those people are alive because of that decision. I wrote a lot of stories about people who decided that they didn't need to do anything to protect themselves. Those people are not alive because of that decision. So, you know what? If at some point this ceases being political and it ceases being of any journalistic interest, the only interest is what are you, you have to decide what are you going to do to protect yourself and your house and your family.
Yeah, might I add on to that? I mean, Abe, did your spidey senses go up? I mean, was there, and it doesn't have to be just that they were black people. It could be, I think, in any cases, I've had some run-ins with some white people that I would not go around again, okay? And I live in the mountains of Tennessee. And I'm just saying, there's people that scare me, and I don't hang around with them. So, I mean, as Cohen said, you have to learn how to protect yourself. And you have to learn, you have to trust your own judgment, your inner judgment, I think.
Well, I agree with you. My spidey senses did definitely go off. After that incident in the morning, I made sure to start looking into some self-defense classes, possibly Taekwondo or karate. So, if they do try anything on me, I'll be sure to beat their asses, pardon my language.
Okay.
Well, I think that, karate, I don't know where you live exactly, but I mean, karate and that kind of thing, that's a good thing to have, I think. And I don't know, Colin, what do you think? I mean, I think martial arts, I've studied them, I taught them for 3 years. I think that's a good thing for anybody.
Anybody within the sound of our voice, if you don't know how to defend yourself, well, you know what? There's nothing Colin Flaherty can tell you to help you figure it out. So that's something everybody has to figure it out for themselves. And that's the plain fact of it.
And there's different ways of defending yourselves. I mean, there's different methods. There's different things that you can do. I mean, I lived in a place in Florida for a long time, and I tell you, I had some Section 8 housing that moved in near me, actually right next to me, and they were throwing crack needles up on my roof. They were just terrorizing the neighborhood. They've been busted so many times. The cops arrested them so many times. My daughter got in a fight with one, and she was put in jail for the night because she got in a fight with a dude, that was jacking cars and everything else. So all I can tell you, man, the best thing I can say is either look, You either vote, I guess it would be, with your feet, or you move to another neighborhood, or you sit there and figure out some way of protecting yourself. This show here is not a means or not a way for us to tell you how to do that. You have to figure that out on your own. If you got a family, yeah, you protect them. And I'm not saying that everybody out there is a scary boogeyman, but the thing is, I just said something probably racist, but
scary boogeyman, racist.
Well, I'm dealing with PC. I'm not PC correct. I'm sorry. I've never been for a long time. So, but I would say, Abe, you're going to have to look at the situation and what you're in, and you're going to have to assess that, and you're going to have to take that on your own. You're going to have to deal with it on your own as far as what you want to do to help you out in this situation.
I'm going to jump in right now and just say I agree with that. And my action might be, I don't know, I feel threatened that they might come into my house late at night and steal something like they do, those people do. And maybe I should just do the preemptive thing and strike back first. Does that make sense?
This is Colin. Listen, I'm telling you something. This conversation is getting a little crazy. There's not going anywhere. So people sometimes call up and ask crazy questions on purpose.
Abe's gone. He's a race baiter. I got rid of him because I just could hear that in his voice. But I probably should have got rid of him earlier. But look, I've been in situations before like this. If what he was initially telling us is true, that's fine. But when he sits here and starts talking about he's going to take matters into his own hand and preempt, no, you can't do that. But you can protect yourselves. You can learn how to defend yourselves. Is that not right, Cole?
You know what? Nobody can ever take that right away from you.
No, that's true.
We have a Second Amendment for that, too, don't we?
What's that?
Yeah, Yeah, sure do. You know, one of the things that prisons, a couple of prison psychologists tell me the same things in emails. They say one of the reasons why so many people are able to ignore all this enormous violence going on around them, and we don't even have to get into the statistics about it, but they're horrific, as you can imagine. They call it infantile omnipotence. That is the feeling a child of two or three years old has by feeling that there's nothing in the world that can hurt him because he hasn't experienced it yet. And there's a lot of that going on in a lot of places in this country.
Well, I would suggest to people out there, not just Dave, because I think he was just a plant calling, but anyways, and, you know, look, that's the nature of this beast here calling. But
one of the interesting things about writing a book like this and writing for WND is that there are a couple websites that do nothing but follow me around and listen to everything I say and everything I write, and you're constantly trying to make sure, like, if I don't dot my I or cross my T, it's like, you know, they're going to, you know, write about it. And so that's par for the course. I don't have any problem. I mean, I seek out, you know, audiences that are hostile. So I don't worry about it. But to me, that guy sounded like he was one of that crowd.
Right. Yeah, and definitely these people sit there and look for people like you, and they've done it on our shows before, and, you know, I pretty much can smell a troll a mile away, but I let them get away with a little bit too much extra there, so I apologize for that. But
nothing to apologize for. It's like, you know what, our thing is we believe in, I don't have any problem going into the lion's den. I appear on black radio stations all the time.
No, and I'll tell you what, it's a pleasure to just boot people like that. It gives me such a glorious feeling, you know what I mean? So, but I'd like to get into these flash mobs with you, if you got time to elaborate on those.
Yeah, here's the thing about flash mobs. I just finished writing an article about this for a magazine called, I write for WND. I'm also writing an article for a magazine called Front Page. And here's the thing. So the people who run these newsrooms and the cops, they can't say the words black mob violence. I mean, they can't. If they say it, they think they're gonna explode. So they're always coming up with new ways to describe what's happening out there, and it's all basic variations on a theme. So when 500 kids, 500 people, black people, you know, run down the streets of Chicago or Indianapolis or Minnesota or Minneapolis or any of these other places, it's like they'll say, well, that's a flash mob. No, that's 500 black people doing really bad things. Oh, it's a flash mob. Don't worry about it. No, it's 500 black people doing really bad things. So they'll do anything to stick a name on it other than what it is. Flash mobs, teenagers, drunken teenagers, gang members. It's like, is that a riot? No, that's a disturbance. Thing in Chicago over the weekend. 500 kids on the streets of downtown Chicago. No, I'm doing it. Kids. 500, what is that? Is that a riot? No, that's mischievous. People are being mischievous.
Yeah.
So it's like, people, you know what? Let's look this in the eye and say what it is. Let's not be afraid to say what it is. And it's not, people make up these words, as if they have meaning when they don't. You know, these words are designed to hide the meaning of what is really going on. And guess what? I don't play that game.
Yeah, and they do that with several things, too. They change the name just meaning the same thing. But do they get that from the top to be sensitive to
Oh, man, you know, it's weird, isn't it? It's like, I don't know how they got how that information gets around, but somebody gives it to them. But, you know, people just pick it up right away.
It's a political correctness. A crowd, you know, just run amok all over it. You know, I mean, they're trying to influence the way we talk. They're trying to influence the way we think. They've been pretty successful at it in most aspects of it. And,
well,
you know
what? We're going to plant our flag right here and say, I don't care what the rest of the universe is doing. We three are going to plant our flag and say, it's not happening on our watch.
Yeah.
No.
I have a great admiration for Dr. Ben Carson. And
yeah, look at the hill we've taken, Barbara.
Listening to his story, how he grew up, and he has shared that he was angry, an angry man, and his mother couldn't read, and he's a brain surgeon today, you know? Good Lord. If that's not the American dream, I don't know what is. But he got out
of it. Isn't that kind of the punchline of the school stories we were telling about how at an early age these kids are being taught resentment and victimization? How many wasted lives are out there because so many kids are growing up thinking they don't have a chance, they can't succeed because everybody hates them? Oh, my God, how much damage has that done? Oh, my God, I don't even want to think about that.
You're absolutely right.
Between the hate mongers in the liberal media that sit there and want to call the Tea Party, they might get a group of 200 or 300 mobsters and gangsters and up in my area up here. I got, you know, the Mexicans up. I got a MS-13, that kind of stuff up here. And when we get these kind of people up here, you don't never hear about them. But when you got Tea Party having a rightful, peaceful protest, and they are labeled as racist, subverts, and so on. I mean, this is how they're trying to manipulate the media, manipulate, and in the end, manipulate the American people to follow what their lead is.
Two years ago in London, they had really, really nasty riots in the summer. I don't know if you guys remember that, two summers ago.
Yeah.
And Associated Press sent one of their crack reporters over there. He figured out what caused the riots in London. May I tell you?
Okay.
The Tea Party.
Tea Party and, you know, whatever else they wanted to report on that was bogus, you know.
Oh,
And I tell you what, the next generation, I think, Colin, is going to be the Muslims. That's the next thing coming up the line.
You know, it's funny. I just finished a book on that because this is exact. I tell you, what you said is like 1,000% true. The same thing's happening with them. We're all looking at what's going on, but nobody is seeing.
Right.
Yeah. How dare you say anything against the Muslims? How dare you? Right here in Tennessee, up here by where I am, we have Representative Joe Carter here in Murfreesboro.
Exactly.
This here talks about
the
mosque in Murfreesboro. Okay, the mosque that they're building in Murfreesboro and so on, and how we cannot talk about them. They
exactly the same. Exactly.
But they don't. And this is the next generation, I think, of violence in our country. I think that's just my estimation of it. That this is going to be bigger, I think, than what we've got now, in my estimation.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that a lot of people are starting to open up their eyes more and more. So that's good. And that's what you guys are doing. So good for you. You know, we're just all doing our part.
Well,
it's the same thing, isn't it? It's the same thing. You look at it, and you're looking at it. You could be sitting next to somebody. You're seeing the same thing. You're seeing the myth of the moderate Muslim. You're seeing all this unbelievable extremism all over the world. They're killing Christians here, there, everywhere. They're starting wars. They're nasty people. And you look at it and you go, that's something's going on there, right? And they go, oh, no, nothing's happening. Nothing's going on there. No, really, they're killing Christians in Africa and Egypt now, right? No, nothing going on there. Oh, they do bad things to little girls over there. Is that right? No, nothing going on. They have honor killings in America. No, nothing going on. So I don't know what this, like, instinct is that we can all, like, people can just cover their eyes and ears and pretend it's not happening, but you know what? I tell you something. That's why what you're doing is important. No matter how big or how small it is, it's just we all have to do our little part.
And that's how we got to where we're at today, because for so many years they've been, oh, don't put up Christmas stuff, it's going to offend somebody. So one person says, oh, I'm offended, and the rest of the town gets penalized because one person is offended. And quite frankly, I got involved because I'm very sick and tired of the bull that goes on out there and the bullying and the lying that takes place.
There is bullying, isn't it?
Yes, and actually I was going to say that because we had Ben Shapiro on our show a couple of months ago when with his book Bullying, and we were asking him that. And when people start calling me a racist, I tell them, because they brought the word racist up, that they are the racist.
What is Thomas Sowell, how does he define a racist? A racist is a conservative winning an argument with a liberal.
Right.
I should have known that.
Yeah, and thank God for Thomas Sowell, and thank God for people like you, too. So, you know, because we have to get the word out. We have to have a healthy discussion on what this is and the problem that underlies it. And the problem, I think, that underlies it is political correctness, for one. That's what started it, but
here's
now
thing.
It's mutated.
Let's not be overly eager to get into underlying stuff, because everybody wants to go there instead of talking about the actual violence happening now, which is really bad. I mean, a girl, a waitress in Chicago over the weekend was beat up by a mob of black people. They hit her with socks filled with rocks.
It used to be soap, you know. I mean, but it's changed and it's morphed into a totally different area now. And there are people getting killed on a daily basis that it's not being reported as sacred. Well, look at the Fort Hood shooter, okay?
Oh, please.
I mean, case in point. We've got a terrorist out there. We've got men out there that were shot that can't even get, benefits, Purple Heart, that kind of thing for their actions. And we've got this guy that is labeled a workplace domestic issue.
And let me ask you this. So what kind of mind would look at that and call that workplace violence? Wow, you know what? That did not come from an enemy of the United States. That came from inside of our government.
It is very troubling.
Well, I call that a liberal enemy of the United States. And that is within our own government, as you said, definitely.
Can you imagine that? Somebody calling that domestic workplace violence? Wow.
I hate to break that conversation up, but I got to read this. Otherwise, I'll probably get in trouble. But I'll blame it on Uncle Bing. I'll blame it on Uncle Bing. Make sure to join former U.S. Navy SEAL Carl Hagee on The Sound of Freedom with Hagen Resch. Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central. You've probably seen Carl on Fox and Friends. He's a well-known author of Battle on the Home Front and an outspoken critic of the Obama administration. And liberals can't stand him because he's right. That alone means he fits right in here. So listen to Sound of Freedom with Carl Hagee and former Navy JAG attorney Guy Rushenthaler. Thursdays at 7 Eastern, 6 Central on conservativenationradio.org for real conservatism for real conservatives. Okay.
Yay!
Okay, next. Check. Did that. So what were we just talking about
all this crazy stuff going on up there. And again, like the people that do bad things, that's crazy. But I will tell you this, in my mind, the person that looked at Fort Hood and said that was workplace violence, that is crazy on a level that we three have never experienced before.
You're right, and I just don't understand. I just don't understand.
It's crazy. We're not supposed to understand it.
I guess you got a point there. But it's got to be stopped. It's just ridiculous. It's so insane.
Well, all we can do, the first step in stopping it is to call it by its proper name. That's what you're doing right now. So you know what? You never know when, that's what we're doing. It's important. And everything's matters. Everything matters. So I congratulate you for everything that you're doing.
Why, thank you. Yeah, we try to give it a shot there. But, there's a lot of little things that we do. We have the shows seven days a week now, Saturdays and Sundays, both at 6. So we all get involved here on the radio, on the internet radio, and then there's things that get done out on the outside world. You were talking about, you know, the Tea Party. Everybody thinks the Tea Party, they don't understand what it is. When somebody found out that I was in the Tea Party, they said, oh, so you're a racist? And I'm like, no. And
That was taken. Look, the media, the lamestream media, the liberal media took that and they ran with it. And they demonized the Tea Party on every account that they could get. They had false reporting that reported on that was ended up false, you know, where people were hurling insults at other people and so on. When you've got people that can sit there and have a rally wherever they want to, that actually, you know, promote violence and so on against people like the Tea Party movement and that kind of thing. I don't know how many friends I've had that have been at rallies that were either beaten or were threatened to be beaten or at some point were threatened with something. And we're talking with Colin Flaherty here, author of White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of Racial Violence to America and How the Media Ignore It. You know, I love that title. I got to get that book. I'm going to get it here tomorrow or tonight. I might order it and read up on that. But Colin, I mean, as far as what do you have any statistical facts as far as the increase in violence on, say, black on black crime or black on Latino crime or Latino on black crime, anything like that?
Here's the thing. The statistics are just as horrific as you can imagine. The difference between black and white crime rates are, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 800%. And so everybody knows that, and that's kind of boring to kind of go there. But I'll tell you all something else that's happening. I write about this in my book. This was even on the front page of the New York Times, believe it or not, how the cops now are underreporting crime. They won't take crime reports. So, you know, if you look at some of these reports, and Department of Justice did a study, just came out a few months ago, also in my book, that said like more than 50% of violent crimes in this country are never reported, mostly because people think the police can't do anything about it. So the numbers are interesting, but we don't need to get locked into them, especially when we can just like see what's in front of us with our own eyes.
Wow.
Well, I know I travel to Chicago once in a while, and you know, I lived in Florida for a while. I'm up here in Tennessee now, and I mean I see this stuff all around. I mean, I see the gang increase. I see just the violence among, I guess, the youth and even some older people, you know, that are seem like they're leading these people down this path of you know, violence. I see people being arrested for major hideous crimes with younger kids, you know. It seems like there's a buddy pal or a buddy system going on here or something.
You know, whatever it is, I'm going to let smarter people than me figure it out. But I'm just going to be the guy sitting there going, that is happening. Don't you dare try to tell me it's not, because it's happening. That's why I wrote the book. The book has like 500 examples of mob violence in it, a lot with video links to it. And so, you know, 10 years ago, people could say, hey, that's not happening. But now it's like, look at that video. You don't believe that one? Look at the other 499 in there. You wouldn't believe what's on. I mean, you wouldn't believe the stuff on video now. People getting shot, killed, stabbed, everything.
Oh, yeah, and the girl fights and the guy fights and that kind of thing on YouTube. I mean, you can sit there any day and just look them up. I mean, they're all over the place.
You know what's I think one of the most dangerous places in the country now is riding a bus. Enormous amount of racial violence on a bus. It's all on video.
You know, and this is not, I don't know, I'm 52 years old. This is nothing really new to me. We used to have riots in school. We would call them riots, I guess they were, and then they were, you know. They, you know, were basically a white girl getting chased down by a bunch of, you know, mixed or black people or whatever. And then once in a while you would even have a white girl chasing getting chased down, or like kid or something like that, by other white guys. So it's not just really, I don't think, confined to one race, but it seems like there is a very disparaging majority going on here.
Anybody who denies that simple fact is just being difficult on purpose.
And so the
liberals will deny it. They'll say that's not happening, but here's why it's happening: because they cut the social programs last year. Okay, I got you now.
I've gone back and I've seen videos of him, and you know, him having people prove that he is a racist, or prove that the union didn't send you here when you have union labels all over the place and things like that. He's like, prove it, and nobody proved it. He offered $1 million to anybody who could say that he did something racial at one of the rallies. And
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
And nobody came up for $1 million. Nobody even made anything up.
Okay, the people that do that kind of stuff, that make those charges and false charges, they don't like it when you get back in their face. They're so used to just being up there and being unchallenged. So it's good that people do that.
Well, yeah. they don't know how to counteract fact. You know, they live in this world of fiction, and I think, look, this is my way of thinking. They know what's going on, but they know that it will hurt their agenda, so they just don't report on it. They don't acknowledge it. They don't even want to think about it. They know what's going on, because I think a lot of it happens to them too.
Yeah,
and either
yeah.
They feel threatened or whatever, you know, by whatever that topic is. I don't know, Barbara. You got? I'd like to get on Trayvon Martin a little bit.
Okay.
If we get time.
Sure.
I remember when that case came out, Colin. Right, and. I didn't live that far from where that happened, but I sat there and watched it as the media sat and portrayed the perpetrator here, I guess they would call it. And they portrayed Trayvon as being this nice little kid. And they put pictures out all over the place of him being such a nice little kid. And, oh, you know, look, he's a, you know, just a young guy. Wow, the dude was old. I mean, if he's got tattoos all over him, he's got all this other stuff. And I was one of the people that sat there and countered this and put up pictures of Trayvon Martin.
Two weeks ago in Brooklyn, a 16-year-old black man by the name of Kiki Gray was stopped by some cops. He ran, and they thought he pulled a gun, and so they shot him, and they produced a .38 gun. So they tried to do Trayvon with this guy. Put the pictures out, the weeping mothers, the sisters. Oh, he wouldn't do it. No, he's not like that. He was a Boy Scout or whatever. Okay, one day everybody's like, oh, what the hell's going on? Next day the videos came out. The next day the police record of 4 arrests came out. The guy was, there's 2 videos of this kid, and there's major protests in Brooklyn over this. 2 videos of the guy doing all these unbelievably violent things. On video, criminal things. So I did a story in Meriden, Connecticut. I called it "The Wrong Guy." A bunch of black guys got together. They decided they're going to beat somebody up. Well, the guy they chose the wrong guy. The guy they chose pulled a knife out and killed one of them. And they tried to make this a Trayvon thing. They tried to turn the victim into the predator and vice versa.
Right.
Until everybody figured out that, you know, they had already beaten somebody up that night. So this is like a knee-jerk reaction now. Everybody wants to go Trayvon on everybody.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, where is that story ended? I mean, that story just, it went poof. I mean, I don't, I don't really hear the conservative mainstream press, which I don't even know if we got that anymore, except for, you know, people like us that are doing our own thing and that kind of stuff, but and people like you, but I don't hear about it. I don't, you know, what are they waiting it for people to forget about it?
I think the trial is scheduled for this summer. I did a chapter about all the incidents around the country of black mob violence that was committed in the name of Trayvon. You know, it was probably 10 cases, pretty nasty stuff.
Trayvon.
Is Zimmerman still in protective custody, you know?
I don't.
You know, his brother follows me on Twitter. His brother's becoming more public now. And a lot of people are saying, listen, they never had a case, and the case is getting weaker by the minute. A lot of people will be surprised if that ever comes to trial.
And another thing that gets me is there was the Black Panthers, once again, were out there calling for blood, and they got nothing.
That's Exhibit A of how insane the racial discussion is in America now. Two-part insanity. One, they could say it. And two, 99% of the people in this country could hear it and go, oh, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
They're almost oblivious to the fact of that it's happening. They want to put it out of their mind, maybe. I don't know.
The oblivious part is the crazy part.
Yeah. Well, we got Karen Sigmund that's calling in. She's from Rage Against the Media. And asked her to call in, too, toward the end here. So she could let us know, or let our listeners and you, Colin, to know what she's doing about all these, you know, being...
Hey, you know what? I'd be happy to stay on the line. I'd be happy to just hang up and listen to her on the computer. It's up to you guys.
Whatever you want to do, you're welcome to do either one, but I'll bring her on. She might even have a question or two for you.
Okay, cool.
Thank you. Karen.
Hi.
Hello, Karen.
Live on air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. We have Uncle Bing. Brenda cut out a little early. She wasn't feeling well.
Oh.
And we also have Colin Flannery on the line, and Colin has written a book about the riots and the black riots that do not get reported.
Mm.
And he was just giving us a whole lot of information that, of course, it's not in the newspaper, so we don't know.
Right.
Yeah, Carl's book is White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of Racial Violence to America and How the Media Ignore It. And I'm going to get that one.
I'm going to too.
And how true is that? The media picks their agenda, their narrative, and if what doesn't fit, what they decide we don't need to know, we don't get to hear about. As true as it is and as counter to their narrative as it is, which this sounds like, is exactly one of those instances.
Well, I think Colin is more focused on notating the violence in America, not so much as far as what the background is of everything, but the violence and, you know.
There's two things about the book, the violence and the ignoring part. The ignoring part, I'm convinced now, is crazier than the violence.
Right.
Yeah, because the ignoring part is actually being part of it, being part and parcel of it.
I know. That's nuts.
Karen,
that's part of all the agenda now to take away the Second Amendment rights, which also leads to one's losing one's First Amendment rights. But the Second Amendment rights out of Sandy Hook, everyone's crying about this, and rightly so. But completely ignoring the violence in our inner cities generally, in Chicago in particular, and I'm sure, you know, what you've documented in your book, and because it doesn't fit their story, and it's it really is outrageous what they choose to ignore.
Well, and the media ignores that the fact that when they outlawed the last gun ban that they had during that 10-year period, there was, 52 more? There was 52 higher school shootings than what there was
right
before the ban and after.
You know what's really empowering right now is, so a newspaper, say people, and I see this all, I write about this all the time in the book, there'll be a black mob freaking havoc in a town, and the newspaper will downplay it and ignore the racial angle of it. So they do this vanilla story, but the people in the comment section and on talk radio really are coming out and going, hey, that's not even close to what happened there. You didn't see this. You didn't do that. You didn't see this or that. All these people that got hurt, you didn't even report that. Why not? So there is, you know, there are, you know, the media is losing its stranglehold, and the citizen press really is rising up for the occasion.
It is. And I think this is undoubtedly why Barbara and Brenda wanted me on. Am I right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
I am I founded and am director of a group called Rage Against the Media, and one of the things that we do is we correct, by those things that you cite, the false narrative that the media conveys, and we do break exactly that stranglehold that you're talking about. They don't have a monopoly anymore. We are rising up and injecting the truth and making sure not only that the truth gets out there, but that people know that they're actually being lied to. It's a two-part thing, you know? Making sure that people's perception of reality is, in fact, truth-based instead of agenda-based, and making them realize that the media has picked one story that they want to tell and won't tolerate anything outside of that story. So it's a double whammy. What you're saying, you know, about people in the comments section and of course, on radio, but also more and more bloggers and so on are getting the truth out there, combating this up to now monopoly that the mainstream media had. And Rage Against the Media is doing everything that we can to weaken that stranglehold that they have, that monopoly, to show people that they're being lied to, and at the same time to build up and empower these alternative media sources so that in the future, Americans are just better informed, because now we're badly informed, and that leads to making poor choices. It leads to bad policy. It leads to people making bad decisions based on bad policy. It leads to confusion and to further subjugation of us by whatever the people in power choose to do. So we're doing our best to fight that on every issue, on this issue, on you name it. We're fighting the
Benghazi, Fast and Furious.
Right. Everything to do with
the target-rich environment.
Yeah. It most certainly is. The sequester, the fiscal cliff, more on Benghazi. We did have a number of Second Amendment flash mobs, Facebook flash mobs, and one of the things that we did inject is they need to have the facts about inner-city violence, about black-on-black violence, about how when you do enact more laws, anti-gun laws, in fact, bad things wind up happening, not good things. You do wind up with more crime. So,
Chicago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With the most stringent anti-gun laws there is. So people think that they know the truth because they read or watch television, and in fact, what they're being told is not the truth. So
well,
we get out here and we correct it.
I think you're seeing, Karen, with groups like yours and ours and Colin over here, you know, commenting on everything, you know, that I think that you're seeing a resurgence in America of I would say traditional American values and conservative values. I mean, I think you're seeing these come back. I mean, which is good. I think you're also seeing a lot more information being out there. So whether we're going to be censored or not, that's another story that's probably, you know, for another time. But I think that you're seeing a lot of this coming up and coming about. And it's good. It's needed. Because we need, you know, we need people like you and Colin and so on to get the word out and to comment on things and to notice things when they're wrong, when they're not right.
Right. And what we do, and in the comment section that you're talking about, Colin, is people realizing that they need to be a little bit more proactive about finding the truth, which is a good thing. And I think I would agree too. You're right. We're returning more to more traditional American, just independent thinking, because we have to. And we have so many more alternative sources out there. Unfortunately, sifting through all of it to find the factual is tricky, but it's important to do.
I was a reporter for a long time, won a bunch of awards, taught reporting. There's one thing that scares the devil out of every reporter. They don't care if people look at them and call them names. They don't care if you say you're liberal and you're hiding. They don't care about that. What they fear is somebody saying, very, very specifically, saying, you said in the second paragraph, third line, you said this, you said X, when it is Y. That is what they fear.
Yes. Yes. And actually, Jay Carney was called on that today from a Fox News reporter.
Is that right?
Yes, about the sequester. How he said that they were going to lay off people, and they haven't done that. They're not worrying about laying off right now, and they don't care about the overtime, continue to pay the overtime. Yeah, it was on Fox News. And I kind of found it amusing because Jay Carney gets all upset. And then, of course, you know, he's wrong because things just aren't supposed to work that way, you know,
right.
Long-term, blah, blah, blah. You know, and
but
then
even
when he starts going like that, it's like Charlie Brown's teacher going, wah, wah.
Right. But even when they're wrong, there are no consequences. So they may be afraid. Jay Carney may be afraid. But Candy Crowley certainly doesn't care at all about the accuracy of anything she says.
That's astonishing.
Right?
That's like unbelievable that somebody has a job doing what Candy Crowley does, getting on TV and just saying things that are, you know, just
exactly.
A lot of times aren't accurate. They're not smart.
Completely
they're not
inaccurate.
Interesting. They're not accurate. So it's
Here's
like,
Morgan.
Wow,
need
how does that happen?
Him.
I'm just right. Piers Morgan is, he just today he said something that was in error. I mean, he does it every day, but he said that the Sandy Hook shooter was a member of the NRA, which is not true. He put two things together and in a tweet. So he doesn't care about accuracy, but he's not a reporter. So that anybody even thinks that anything he says should be given any kind of credence is that's another entire problem. That people get their news or their opinions from Piers Morgan and Jon Stewart and David Letterman and Bill Maher. That's a whole other problem. But when newscasters and news reporters say things that are factually inaccurate, or when they leave out parts or entire stories, such as the one you're describing, because they don't fit the narrative, it's criminal. It really is.
It is criminal.
A picture of the world that is not true, but that people take as true.
And the people suffer.
And we all, you know, people say we're a conservative organization. We're not. I think this is a completely nonpartisan issue. Every single American suffers when the economy tanks. We all suffer when with Obamacare. Obamacare doesn't care if you're blue or red. It doesn't care if you're Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Communist. Every single person is going to suffer. They don't hand out pink slips based on your party affiliation. We all suffer from the bad policies that were shoved through without being scrutinized by this complicit media. And it's not to mention national security. And don't even get me started about Benghazi.
My cell phone's dying down here. I'm going to bid you guys good night and thank you for being so patient with me on the phone here tonight.
Oh, Colin, okay. Thank you so
great
much
talking
for joining
to you.
Us. We did actually get a lot of information out of you, and I really appreciate it.
Best of luck to you all, and I hope we get a chance
thank
to talk
you.
Again. Karen, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
To you. Book, too.
Okay. I'll catch the rest of the show on the air.
All right, buddy. We'll plug you. Colin Flaherty, award-winning reporter for WNC, or WND, I'm sorry, and he's got a book out, White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of Racial Violence to America and How the Media Ignore It. And, we'll be promoting that, and let's get that book.
I have another liner.
But, Karen, I think Barbara's got coming up
I
on
actually have a liner and a break to do. Yeah, sorry, Karen, if you can hang out with us.
Yep.
The leftist media would like conservatives like us to think we're just a few lonely voices in the wilderness. Don't be fooled. Americans that identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by 2-1, according to numerous polls, even by liberals. If you respect traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the internet. It's traditionalamericanmovement.com, or TradAm, as we call it, our home. Traditionalamericanmovement.com is a place where real conservatives can meet up without turf wars and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up, find out what's happening, and be a part of the conservative revolution, all on traditionalamericanmovement.com. That's www.traditionalamericanmovement.com. Hope to see you there soon. And by the way, TradAm is a liberal free website, which is always a good thing. Now, I have to play a couple of these things, so I'll be screwing up probably, but I'm going to try.
You're listening to Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing, The Beauty and the Brain, on conservativenationradio.org.
Okay, that's all I can find. Whoops. Okay, here's one.
So glad we left that stupid party.
No joke.
Hey, baby, are you an overdue library book? Because you got fine written all over you.
Ugh, barf. What about that girl with the hoop earrings?
Ridiculous. When she was dancing...
Megan, look out! Look out!
Oh, my God, Becky. Becky, are you okay?
My arm. I think it's broken.
Can you bend it?
It's already bent. In the wrong direction.
I can't believe this. I'm so sorry. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Really? Just buzzed?
Yeah, I swear.
Well, in that case, my arm is fine. Ah, that's better.
You're really okay? You're serious, Becky?
No, genius. I'm not serious.
My arm, it hurts.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Filets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Okay, and we're back. With, you know, we were just talking about, too, Karen, when we do these flash mobs, and they come back, these people come back at us and tell us how wrong we are, how it's not true, and well, for example, today, I posted up Publius Holder's, what was it? I don't even remember what it was on. But they told me how incorrect her writing was, and this is all garbage, it's not true. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, these people are oblivious to what is going on in the world.
It's really terrifying, isn't it? I think one thing I've learned from these flash mobs is I totally understand how November happened now.
Yeah.
I really do. And the more I'm out there, the more shocked I think I would have been if it had gone any other way. The people we encounter when we do these flash mobs, it is absolutely horrifying. And they are so confident in their ignorance. I mean, this is nothing really new, right? I mean, Ronald Reagan said this. The thing about our liberal friends isn't that they don't know anything, it's that what they know isn't so. And that I think I got the gist of it, if not verbatim. And it's even more so now. Not only does everything that they know is it not so, but they flip it and they accuse us of not being fact based, and it's a very scary thing, I think. And hate filled. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but Huffington had a post, and I'm still reeling from this. It was about a Gallup poll that said something about what people think Republicans are like. And Huffington posted a little article about it with the question, what do you think are the worst traits of Republicans?
Yeah.
And this is deliberate hate-mongering. They aren't looking for anything thoughtful. They were looking for the worst traits. And I actually reported this as hate speech. I said, imagine if Huffington asked this about any other group, any group, Jews, whites, Christians, Muslims, women, men, you name it, Mexicans, African Americans, Indian, right? Any other group.
Right, you're absolutely
right. It
would
not be allowed.
It would be a hate crime.
It would be a hate crime. And the responses were things like, they breathe, they exist.
Yeah.
Everything. And I reported those because that's hate speech.
Right.
If that were about gays, right?
Well, yeah. It's hate speech, Karen, but that's the way these liberals operate, you know.
Oh,
they,
I understand that.
They have to pull the race card and they have to do the class envy. And, you know, that's just the way they operate. And, you know, we're talking with Karen Siegman from Rage Against the Media, and I'm wondering, like, what do you guys got coming out lately? Other than that, but I'd like to sit there and twist their words around. See, I'd like to sit this is what I like to do, and I just, you know, once in a while come out and sit there and say, okay, this is hate speech. All right, well, this is what that is. And you put it right back in their face, and they no, that's not what we meant about that, you know.
Well, like at a certain point, there's no point in conversation. At a certain point, one of the things that we do is we say, I thought that Democrats were all about tolerance, and you're demonstrating exactly the opposite of tolerance.
Right.
But I've also been reading, and you had him as a guest on your show, Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
His book about bullies has tactics about how to deal with that. And I also just saw Dr. Tim Daughtry speak a few days ago. He wrote a book called Waking the Sleeping Giant, and he has tactics about how to deal with this kind of thing. So there's that. And I think what we will have on Rage is actually a training session and tips about how to have these encounters, because it is key. Because you don't want to get bogged down, and you can't be on the defensive. That's absolutely wrong. You have to turn it back.
That's why the facts are excellent to present.
Exactly. So we really do need to be smart about it. We need to present facts. We need to not wrangle with them on their terms, but we need to define our own terms. We need to frame things in a way that puts them on the defensive, like us noting their intolerance, us noting their hate, us noting, you know, somebody said yesterday, well, I bet you listen to blah, 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 and do your panties get all in a twist when he speaks? And I'm not going to talk to you if you're going to reference my undergarments. That's not okay. So establishing.
I think there are some groups that can maybe take that heat off, because look, we have to start. I think some of us have been proactive in that game, but we have to take the heat off. Some of the other groups are getting the word out, and let some of the other groups. And we're a conglomeration of all groups out there, conservative groups and just like-minded people. It doesn't have to be just conservatives, but traditional American type groups, that kind of thing. And I think there are some groups that can take the heat off the rest of them, so they get their message pushed and we take the heat. That's what I'm thinking. We have to start playing as nasty and as low down as the lying dirty dog that they lie to be able to compete with them. That's my opinion.
Calling them out on their lies.
And I'm tired of being nice with some of these people anymore, because they're not. They don't play nice, and they know that, and the media knows that. And I think if we can play it not so nice but be very respectful, I think we can do it.
Yeah, so getting down and dirty to the same extent as them, that wouldn't be my tack, but not allowing them to get away with it, and while being respectful, and while, you know, they call us a racist, to me the answer is, what you've just done is belittle the very notion of racism, and I find that offensive. And another thing that I did yesterday, people, you know, all this hate stuff, they this, they that, to saying, where's your evidence? Where's your evidence? And to accuse people of being a certain way without evidence, that's wrong. And, you know, just pointing out that what they're doing is exhibiting intolerance and hate. I mean, at that level, it's fine. And when they lie, call them on it, absolutely, and present them with facts. So, yeah, I agree. You cannot let them get away with this. And that's, conservatives have a tendency to do that. Romney had a tendency to do that, right? He did play the nice guy. And by not jumping on those who accused him of this, that, and the other thing, and by saying that he likes Obama, he's just misguided, what he did was say everything that Obama has said about him is then okay, which it's not. No, and you allow a lot when you say that. When there's somebody who's a liar and you say, oh, but they're a nice guy, what you've just done is said that their lies may well be true. And we cannot allow that to happen anymore.
Right.
We need to do what you're saying. We need to combat it at every step. Let me just say, though, aside from doing stuff on Facebook, we have a protest coming up.
We have April, 36 seconds.
April 4th in Los Angeles and any city near you, find us on Facebook, and we will help you coordinate more protests. Not April.
May
4th. I'm sorry, May 4th. Protests coming up, so join us.
Thanks, Karen. Thank you so much for the last minute coming on. I appreciate
thank you, Karen.
That.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking me. It was a great...
Oh, you're welcome. I just figured it would be a good fit. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening.
Love Karen Chicken.
Thanks. We're off the air. I will.
It was great fun, Barbara. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And nice to talk to you, too.
Yes, maybe we see if we can get her over on SOP, too.
That would be good.
Happy to do it.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Let me know. Thank you. I have to head out to a meeting.
All right, Karen.
All right,
thank
girl.
You so much.
All right. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Uncle Bing, I think we're in trouble.
Nah, we might be in trouble. Let's smooth over.
I cannot use at all.
All right. Well, let's just close up the show. Go ahead and play the closer. And
we're done. We're not recording anymore.
You stopped the show? Okay.
No, the show stopped it.
I should still be in record mode, but
it's just recording left.
Yeah, it's still recording. We're fine. Go ahead, play. Go ahead, say your comments at the end, and go ahead and close the show out. Play the outro.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here and listening. Oh, I got to find it now. Oh, there it is. Good girl. Thanks for helping out, Bing. I appreciate that.
No problem, man. I had a good discussion. It was great. We had a great time.
Okay. Good girl.
Y'all take care and drive. God bless.
shoot, bye, shoot.